Welcome to this edition of the Atlanta IT Manager Tech Talk series. We are doing episode 3. I'm Ruth Morton, and this is my colleague, Jonathan Rosenblit.
Hello again, everyone.
Today's topic is planning your Windows roadmap. And we kind of set this episode up because we knew that the Build Conference was going to be in September, and they'd be talking about Windows 8. And having been in IT for a while, new technologies are coming out all the time. And I've heard, and I know Jonathan has heard from people as we go on the road and we talk at different events, that there's sometimes, technology fatigue, another sure. rollout, another
definitely one way of putting
language to learn, or another technology to learn.
A new framework to upgrade.
Yeah, so we wanted to kind of talk about, what kind of knowledge do you need today, or what can you do today to help set yourself up for success in the future without having it be such a big deal? And we brought a special guest on the show with us today. Today we have David Remmer here to my left, and he's with Microsoft Canada. And David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ruth.
Why don't you just start off by giving us a bit of an introduction about who you are and what you do at Microsoft?
Sure. So I'm the developer evangelism manager for our depth team. And essentially what that means is we work with the largest Canadian brands in Canada to help make the Microsoft platform their primary platform choice. And we really kind of have deep engagements with them, talking about what their challenges are, what their business needs are, and how the Microsoft platform can help them achieve some of their goals.
So it sounds like it's kind of like breaking down the barriers, finding out what those barriers are and working to overcome them.
It very much is working to help them determine what it is that they need to accomplish on their technology stack, if you would, and really trying to help break down the obstacles they have to reaching a lot of customers, having customers have a good experience with them, and ultimately making it so that they can do more commerce, whatever that commerce might be.
Awesome. And then also maybe internally also saving a lot of money as they're doing it and stuff like that, right?
Exactly right. I mean, it turns out that reaching millions of people is very expensive, and so every way that we can kind of make that process more efficient saves money, makes it so that you can do more with less, which in these days is always an important thing.
Well, absolutely.
Awesome. And before coming to Microsoft, you worked with various companies as well. Can you tell us a little bit about your past experiences?
Sure. So I've been a consultant. I've also been a software developer and a development manager. So I've been really lucky in my career to kind of both talk with people around what their challenges are, how to kind of overcome obstacles, as well as kind of get my hands dirty. One of the things I still love to do is to sit down and code and build solutions.
Seriously, I'm not the only one. She seems to think that I'm the only one that loves to code still.
Well, that's great. So, I mean, it's a real catch-22, right? You've got new technologies coming out. It can be a barrier, or it can be a high cost to adopt them. But if you don't, then you lose out on additional functionality. You may, there's right now talent recruitment is a big thing. So a company that's using old technology may not be able to get the employees on board that they want. There's all sorts of ramifications. But can you talk to us about some of the biggest drivers that you find, some of the biggest drivers and the advantages for updating? Because it's not just about, the latest shiny thing.
Yeah, I think what we tend to forget is that there's a bunch of kind of core functionality that our IT infrastructure supports. And in most cases, it's actually working fairly well. I mean, there are certain companies that occasionally they have service outages, and so you kind of wonder, are they really working that well? But when you start looking at kind of what we in the industry call a service level agreement, we actually do a pretty good job. I think that the challenge is less kind of the keeping the lights on, it's the opportunity cost of not moving forward, right? So there's just so many capabilities that could make us more productive, opportunities we would be able to take advantage of if we had infrastructure that would support us. And so I think that's one of the real challenges is as you kind of get further and further away from the latest and the greatest, you also spend more and more of your time kind of in remediation, if you would. You spend a huge amount of time fixing virus problems or trying to keep the hardware just running, and you're not doing things like doing instant unified communications or taking advantage of cloud services and really getting a modern infrastructure to solve modern problems.
Right. And so what are some of the pitfalls? Well, tell me some of the experiences that you've had of Do you have any stories about people that have moved to the technologies and some of the benefits that they've seen?
Sure. Well, so I've actually been really fortunate. My time at Microsoft has involved a number of product launches, including upgrades to our consumer, our client operating system, Windows 7. I got an opportunity to talk to a lot of our customers and our partners around it, as well as kind of some of the more server-based infrastructure like Windows Server, SQL Server, SharePoint. Mm-hmm. And so I've been really fortunate in my career to work with a bunch of people who have had the challenge of upgrading infrastructure or modernizing their IT development shops. And so it has been a really interesting challenge for a lot of them. We're also very fortunate. We work with small to medium-sized organizations where perhaps they've got 75 client machines that have to be upgraded and a few dozen servers that need to be upgraded, all the way to some of the largest banks and telcos in the country. And then you're talking about tens of thousands of people.
It's a huge undertaking, and it can be, I think, really daunting. And I know actually last year at Tech Days, I think I was at West somewhere, and I sat down at an evening event, and I was sitting down with a couple of guys that worked for an insurance company. So insurance companies are not probably the best known for moving with technology. And here they are. They're hearing about all this exciting stuff. They're hearing about things like using direct access with Windows 2008 Server and Windows 7 on the front end and all these kind of really cool things that would make their organizations run better and be more efficient and stuff. And yet, they're really frustrated because they're still using XP, they're still running, you know, Office 2003. But I can imagine from the standpoint of an executive in that company to roll out new products, like, well, where's the ROI on this? How do you justify it?
Well, so again, I think, you know, one of the challenges that I think we have in the industry is there tends to be a really strong alignment between IT and the technology department and the finance department. And so very often yeah. you'll see that upgrade programs have to be justified on their return on investment, which, again, I'm not going to sit here and argue is not a good exercise to go through. But my experience is that accounting is a very useful tool for looking backwards and seeing kind of where you've been and how you've got to where you are. It isn't necessarily the best discipline for looking future ways. And so understanding kind of the opportunity cost, it's very simple for someone, direct access, to, you know, the example you brought up, very simple to figure out what would it cost to implement direct access and you know, what would kind of the benefits be. Not so simple to understand, hey, if you've got people on the road and they're not closing deals or they're not seeing as many yeah. customers as they could because they're fighting with VPNs and other infrastructure, that doesn't get measured in your return on investment. People try to model it, but in reality, I think that there's a lot of agility that is hard to represent in pure dollars and cents. And yet, if you actually look at organizations, kind of, if you take a step back and just kind of, rather than trying to justify any particular program, look at some of the organizations that have been extremely successful in their industries and who have kind of competed very, very strongly against their peers in an industry, it just so happens that many of them are really doing a good job of exploiting technology.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, I'm not suggesting anyone out there that you should stop doing ROIs on projects or that, hey, you should just, you know, jump into the pool with both feet without, you know, testing the water. But it is important, in my mind, to make sure that we don't forget that a lot of the benefits of new technology are hard to quantify. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I've been very fortunate. I work with a lot of large organizations, small organizations, and just as an example, Windows 7, people running XP versus Windows 7, I have not ever run across a person who's running Windows 7 on their machine who says, I would rather go back to my XP machine.
Yeah.
I mean, I meet with lots of people, and...
And you're not just saying that because you work for Microsoft.
I really am not. I mean, it's, yeah. you know, although of course, I would get paid to say that if it wasn't true, but it is.
Yeah.
And what's fascinating is, you know, we have this tendency to get frustrated with new technology. It's changed. It's different.
Changed.
I need to learn something. I need to do something to make it possible. But what I find fascinating is after you talk with someone who's taken advantage of it for a while, inevitably they are more satisfied after using later technology than they were previously.
Once they get over that hump.
And actually, it's funny that we get into this topic because you're looking at it from the infrastructure perspective. You're looking at it from the client machines, the desktops, and stuff like that. I know that when I'm talking with development managers and I always find that as we're talking about planning, we're talking about roadmaps. You're telling me things like, well, we can see all of the new advantages of the platforms, and we see the benefits that we would get, the productivity gains of, let's say, upgrading to a new version of the framework, moving things into the cloud, so on and so forth. But then, as soon as you pass that over to the IT guys, sorry, Ruth.
As soon as you pass
that over to the IT guys, you always get, well, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Okay, not all IT.
No, fair enough.
Guys and gals,
you're absolutely right. How do you, going back to that concept of the business case and the planning and stuff like that, from a development manager's perspective, where it's easy to qualify things but more difficult to quantify, how does that get factored into your planning and your roadmaps?
It's very tough. There's no argument that trying to justify a project that just gets you to where you are today, what you have to invest in, has a very difficult time seeing a positive return. But at the same time, I think we have a tendency to get caught up in our what I call technology debt, right? And so when you start a new project or a new methodology, you start using a technology, or even learning a new skill, you tend to have this kind of, you have a dip, your productivity dips, and the only reason for doing it is because at some point you'll get back to how productive you were or what the return was, and then you'll start to exceed that. And at some point, hopefully, you've actually more than made up the dip in productivity. And I think that's what is sometimes hard to remember is, yes, if I have one client who had built an awful lot of enterprise resource planning systems, ERP-like systems, and we started talking about where the Microsoft platform would make sense for them to start making future investments. And I began to talk about Dynamics and the XRM platform that we've built. And we have some customers who've literally spent years developing solutions, ERP-like solutions, in their own platforms and their own methodologies, who have then kind of taken the leap of faith and started to build them in XRM. And 2 years worth of work gets replicated in a couple months. And then the important thing is, well, okay, so that you could argue that's 2 months wasted, but what's much more exciting is what were they able to accomplish the next 2 months,
right? Yes.
And then the 2 months after that. And so, I have very rarely worked on projects where you couldn't take an existing solution, on the technology side or existing infrastructure, and with some investment, be able to make it much more productive and in very short order, because you've already got the learnings, you've got the capabilities. We're talking about building on what you already have. Yeah. And I think that's, the real desire many times, especially in the software business, a lot of software developers love to start greenfield, to say, hey, I don't care what we wrote before, let's just rip it all down and we'll start fresh.
I may have done that once or twice.
Exactly. I mean, that's the dream. But in reality, all of the learning that took place to actually get to where you were is very important. And historically, if you want to kind of build what existing functionality is already there and enhance it, it usually doesn't take all that much time to rebuild what was already there. What takes most of the time is figuring out how to do it in a way that it can be evolutionarily expanded, evolutionarily deployed.
And I think that actually you touched on a very important point, that now as we're looking at planning into next versions of operating systems and so on and so forth, next iterations of devices, How do you plan for what you don't know?
That's a good question.
It is a great question. And the answer is you can only plan for what you do know, and you have to put contingencies in for what you don't know. I think there's before I actually started working on as the manager of our team, I actually was an architect advisor, and really that meant that I would go to our customers and our partners and try to understand their architectures and how our platform would fit into them. So not really as consumer facing as the role is now, but one of the very important things as an architect that you look at is coupling. There are interfaces between different systems and subsystems, and how tightly coupled or decoupled you make a solution has a huge impact on your ability to respond to change. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we do see in terms of kind of meta changes in the industry is a consolidation around markup languages, how do you make screens, functional languages, how do you develop code, if you would, that can execute, that can have behaviors, if you would, right? Actually do things, functionality on a computer. And so we're starting to see, I think, a consolidation where we have standards, exercises to build those, and they become more decoupled from any one particular feature on a platform. And so I'm a big believer in kind of the 80-20 rule, which means, you know, you build a solution which hopefully 80% of the time will run on a variety of scenarios, like a mobility scenario, a desktop scenario. And then that last 20%, you start customizing based on specific needs, right? So, and again, that last 20%, very hard to plan for. You really have to be concentrating on making sure that 80% is as flexible and as reusable as possible.
So when you talk about decoupling pieces, that means that then I can take a piece, is it like modular, I can take a piece and update that piece or hopefully and not impact the rest of it as significantly as if it were not decoupled.
Exactly, okay. Right. And I think that's important. There are some pieces that tend to be very highly coupled. If you are using certain services for your storage engine or analysis services, for instance, mm-hmm. And that are specific to a particular technology, and then you're kind of having a device or a client that's making use of those, you may actually find that those pieces are tightly coupled.
Yep.
And there's not much you can do about that, but you have to kind of make sure you've identified that, you understand that there is that kind of coupling within two systems. But in general, the industry is working towards a place where there's as much decoupling as possible, that in between those two things are standards, be they markup standards like HTML5 or markup standards like XAML. But those kind of interfaces now mean that you're less dependent on one particular subsystem and more dependent on the interface stability.
Which is actually also probably why you see a lot of people offloading some of the business logic and core engines of their applications into the cloud, yeah. Right? Sort of just to see that move out of the infrastructure. And going back to your 80-20, you know, that's sort of like, okay, so now we have that last remaining 20 as what you actually need to plan for. For you know your future iterations of your client systems, right?
And again, I mean, when you look at that, that's a really strong decoupling of the client user experience and some of the actual logic, data, business processing that takes place. And the cloud is in fact one of those technology sets, capability sets that are extremely flexible. So when you start marrying the two together, you are now able to have subsystems running in the cloud evolving at a different pace than they might necessarily be evolving on the device.
And I do want to go back before we get into different technologies and that are coming out today. So you made a joke, and it was a good joke about, and it's very typical about how the development team wants to make a change, and the infrastructure people go, no.
If only that was a joke.
I think it's important. It's important to understand that part of it is because things are not decoupled in most environments.
Absolutely.
And so any change that's made on the development side really impacts the infrastructure and creates a lot more work. So we can think of, and so IT becomes a blocker. And so if you can decouple those pieces, and it gives an organization a lot more freedom to take advantage of new functionalities and technologies without running up against that barrier of, oh my goodness, well, that impacts this, which impacts this, which impacts this. And, you know, I remember working for one company where there was new technology they wanted to bring in that used a certain piece. It was reliant on a certain piece of programming, but another application used a different version, and two versions couldn't exist on the same machine. So we talked about application virtualization and worked at it that way. But so, and that's again virtualization, decoupling of the application.
So I was just going to say that I think when you look at one of the kind of most important innovations from a development perspective, as well as from a kind of an IT pro infrastructure perspective, virtualization I think is probably one of the biggest things that's happened to the industry. And a lot of people, if you take a look at virtualization right now, predominantly people are thinking about server virtualization. They're thinking, I've got 5 workloads all running on one server or on 5 different servers. Wouldn't it be great if I consolidated them and ran them on one server and therefore have higher resource utilization. When you start going to the next level, and that's actually virtualization on the client. And so we're starting to see, you know, you'd mentioned XP, and there's lots of customers who still have applications that will are tightly coupled to XP for whatever reason, and won't necessarily be easy to migrate, for instance, to a newer version of Windows. But we actually see in Windows 7 today, we have a technology that allows you to actually run an XP virtual session.
Yep.
So your
XP
application,
mode.
Exactly. Your application is actually running in a virtual session, thinking that it's running in XP. It works just fine, and yet you're still getting the advantages of modern operating system, either for the rest of the applications or even for things like direct access.
Yeah.
So I think, and then as you point out, there's the next level of application virtualization where applications themselves become insulated from the environment and from each other. And so I do think that, that's a huge innovation that, again, is really about decoupling the physical as well as some of the logical subsystems from each other.
Yeah.
So, David, let me ask you. As we're talking about the different combinations, different technologies, Ruth, as you mentioned, and the infrastructure managers and the development managers that are watching and are tuning in, because there are all of these options, how do you go to sit down and even get your mind around how to plan, and then sort of what are those first steps? Where do you go from here? So we know as managers we need to do this, but now what?
Yeah, I think one of the things that what we see a lot of our customers and partners doing is the same thing they did last week, right? They're constantly evolving their systems slowly, and again, I'm not going to suggest for a second that you shouldn't be doing that, but I do think that in a lot of cases, we don't take a step back and look at what are the requirements, what are the opportunities, what kind of strategy does our organization have, and how does our IT strategy fit into that? And I think, one of the important initiatives, and sometimes we kind of feel like, hey, I've got so much on my plate on my day job, really, come on, Dave, don't be dumb. I don't have enough time to do that. But in many cases, as I say, you can easily find yourself doing what you did last week for the next 10 years, and then one day your head pops up and you realize, oh my God, we're not competitive anymore. My competitors have really taken a strategic view of technology, strategic view of the solutions they're building, and have a competitive advantage over me. Over the years, there's been lots of conversations around, does technology give you a competitive advantage? And I would argue that technology in of itself doesn't. It's available, freely available to lots of people. But how you use it and how it fits into your strategic goals, that's where you get strategic advantage.
And that's why it's so hard to have a specific, this is, you do this, because every company is different, right? And everyone has to look at, what is our business? What are we trying to achieve here? And then take a look at the technologies and go, okay, what's available to me? And then how can I match the pieces together, and on that, let's just what are some of the most important emerging technologies in your opinion?
I think when I'm looking at what a lot of our customers and partners are doing, I see an awful lot of kind of web-based technologies, and so by that I mean technologies that have a very low cost to deploy, are very cross-platform, and are using skills that a lot of people already have. So we've been building websites for 15 years now. People have gotten pretty comfortable with JavaScript, with HTML, and more comfortable with cascading style sheets. And so we're starting to see that as kind of an emerging development platform, if you would, that you can build solutions that will work online, offline, have very high capabilities for graphical rendering, and at the same time are very cross-platform.
And with that, you're referring to HTML5.
Well, so HTML5 is a new set of capabilities in HTML. So the advantage is that someone who already knows HTML is 80% there for learning HTML5. Which is very different than a lot of the kind of platform shifts we've seen in the past, right? I remember when I first learned Java, it was very similar to the C++ I already knew, but there were some substantial differences that took me a long time to get around, and namespaces. Whereas when I look at the jump from HTML to HTML5, it's really additive. There's a few things that you would probably do differently now than you used to, but things like the video tag, things like offline storage, things like the canvas ability to draw, all of those capabilities are in addition to the skills that people already have. Yeah. So to me, it's a very powerful platform. You're starting to see it being very useful for kind of a web experience, for, in the case of offline HTML5, the ability to have an application that works, you know, in offline storage, local storage, works just as well when it's connected and when it's not connected. And we're starting to see more and more applications that are tailored to a particular platform that are also being offered in JavaScript and HTML5.
And actually, for development managers, a really easy way to see that for yourselves and your team as well. If you go to beautyoftheweb.com, it's a really great platform to see all of the innovations that David was talking about from that perspective. And then you also mentioned cloud, which we talked about before. Great place to start there, I would say, WindowsAzure.com, right?
Yeah.
Probably kind of, and that actually works for both development managers and infrastructure managers. Yeah. It has plenty of information for both. But what about on-premise stuff, you know, Ruth or Dave?
So as far as infrastructure is concerned, the best place to go to learn about the latest technologies and about deploying, exploring them and deploying them, finding out the functionalities is the Springboard site, so microsoft.ca/springboard. There's information on IE9, on Windows 7, as well as Windows Server 2008. We have an evaluation download center, which is great, so you can try all this stuff out, set up.
That's the one on TechNet, right?
Yeah, so it's technet.microsoft.com. I've got it here, /en-ca. I couldn't find a nice URL, but anyway, /evalcenter. If you take a look, if you search for TechNet evaluation center, it should come up. But all those products are available for download, either as a trial or to test out. And so I would encourage you to get your teams to put together a lab to learn about the functionalities. We've also got this great conference coming up.
Yeah.
Have you heard of it?
I was going to say.
No. Please tell me about it.
So Tech Days Canada 2011 is coming up. We are in Toronto October 25th and 26th.
2 weeks.
We're in Vancouver November 15th and 16th.
Yes,
and we
Montreal.
Are in Montreal November 29th and 30th.
And then, of course, online.
And there's a huge
24/7
online,
afterwards.
Yeah, there's a huge online initiative happening because, I mean, Canada is such a big country. We try and cover all of Canada, and we just found that we can't go to every place. We're also trying to get this information out through other. Through sponsoring other conferences like DevTeach and Prairie DevCon, which is out west.
Developers.
And having different things like we sponsor all sorts of stuff because it's all about education. It's all about knowing what's
available.
Well,
you can't plan.
You can't
without knowing, right?
How can you be strategic if you don't know what's available to you?
Absolutely.
So, any last thoughts before we wrap this up?
Well, I'm going to leave it up to our guests for some last thoughts.
So I just, I guess if I was going to kind of wrap it all up, I would say that there is obviously a big challenge when it comes to kind of keeping current with the technology, having a roadmap that makes sense for your organization and is taking advantage of new capabilities. But again, I think you really have to kind of keep your eye on the prize, and that is that, yes, it's going to take a lot of work, it's going to be stressful, there's going to be issues, but at the end of the day, a technology set that is modern, that is really kind of enhancing collaboration, enhancing productivity, will eventually give you an advantage over those that kind of continue to take advantage of existing infrastructure, but that's aging, that isn't giving you the same sets of capabilities. So I know it's going to be tough, but it's definitely worth the exercise.
Awesome.
And it's actually a great segue into what we're going to be talking about next month, which is talking about agile software delivery and how that also helps in the cost optimization, getting things out, getting value out faster. And we actually have a very, very important guest joining us. All of our previous guests haven't been just as important. However, we do have the man who pretty much wrote the book on ALM, Sam Guckenheimer, is joining us. Next month, so make sure to stay tuned for that. I believe it's November the 10th, right?
November 10th,
yeah.
And then we're also doing a special edition up in Tech Days Vancouver because we had the opportunity to invite Mary Jo Foley up, and so she's a technology reporter. She has been reporting on Microsoft for the last 25 years,
oh,
so
yes, absolutely.
We thought, well, let's do a session with her, and we're going to be talking about the future of IT and getting her thoughts on what's new, what's coming down the pipe, what should you be looking at. And I'm sure, she always has great stories, so it should be a really good session. And we're doing that one on the 15th, which is not our usual day.
Hence the special edition.
But either if you sign up for the newsletter, that's how we get all this information out, or follow us on the blogs.
Don't forget the LinkedIn group.
We have a LinkedIn group for the Align IT infrastructure and development managers, I think is what it's called.
And then the Align IT portal as well, align-it.ca.
Yes.
Right. Twitter, of course.
And Twitter. We're all over the place.
All over.
So if you're not sure, just contact either me or Jonathan, and we'll hook you up with what's going on.
Yeah, and we'll have all that information up on the portal as well for you. Right. So,
thank you very much for joining us, and thank you, Dave, for sharing your wisdom with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.